And we're back on Fictional Frontiers. I'm your host, Sohei Bawan. Each week here on Fictional Frontiers, we cover the quote-unquote most noteworthy in pop culture entertainment, whether it's film, television, video games, you name it. We try to cover it. We do our level best to cover it. However, when it comes to the moniker of best, that's where the points of contention come into play, because I would submit that obviously it's all subjective, number one, and that number two, a lot of this best of is really just fodder for conversation, for argumentation, for status, what have you. Obviously, if it's a metric, okay, you can say, okay, I have 3 pounds of rice and you have 2 pounds of rice. So I obviously have more pounds of rice than you have. Okay, when it comes to those kinds of things, there are certain things you can say, I don't say definitively, but you can pretty much say that, okay, there's a rational claim that's supported by evidence, okay? And knowledge is typically transmitted in one of three ways. It's typically transmitted through transmission, like history. None of us lived during World War II, or most of us didn't live during World War II. There may be some people still alive that we're not aware of who lived through World War II. Actually, there are probably quite a few people still. But nonetheless, whether they fought in a particular battle in World War II, we get that information through transmission. Okay? Then there's calculations, okay, that we can kind of glean information from based on mathematics and, you know, the idea that, say, 1 plus 1 equals 2. We don't actually have to see 1 plus 1 equals 2, but the calculation, the rational thought that goes into it leads us to a particular conclusion. And then the final way of transmission of knowledge is through observation, okay? So you can see that, okay, there's a fire burning because I'm in front of that. I'm actually seeing that with my own senses, okay? Those are the three primary means of transmission of knowledge and reaching certain conclusions. And there's obviously, going back to the third one, this notion of sensory perception, and I won't get into the notion of seeing with the heart or the spiritual elements of things, because there's that which can be perceived through the soul, and that's not tied to seeing with the eyes or the ears or the touch. It's a different form of perception that's not based on physical senses. It's based on metaphysical senses, okay? But I digress here. The point of the matter is that when it comes to conclusions about certain things, particularly awards that are voted on, we cannot say definitively that this is tied to this notion of calculation. It's more or less subjective conclusions that we're reaching, okay? Now, you could say, okay, it's transmitted, okay, but again, some of that transmission might have some subjectivity to it. I'm talking about hardcore facts, okay? Why do I bring this all up? Well, because, again, the reason for the best of is because there's this inherent need for competition or love of competition among us, maybe in the human being himself or herself, that drives people to excel. And if you didn't have any designation of what was better than something else, then you would have a stagnation, okay? You would reach a point of mediocrity where people are not progressing. So there's this idea and notion that if you acknowledge something as being better than something else, that will lead to a refinement, that will lead to a betterment, et cetera, et cetera. The problem, which oftentimes rears its ugly head in the award seasons that we see here in the film industry, is that that motivation might be there on the surface, at least in the minds of many people, that there's this desire to recognize the best of the craft because we want to move craft or art forward, film forward in particular. But the reality, and I'm going to talk about this today, is that that is oftentimes the farthest thing from people's real intent. Okay, there's a motivation underlying all this that's not tied to promoting art itself, but it's actually tied to the pushing of certain agendas or certain perspectives on life or the acceptance or rejection of certain things. And regardless of how it's spun in certain circles, and again, that's where the media comes into play, and I'm not saying that the media cannot be trusted per se, although obviously there's an agenda behind all these institutions. It always helps to try to get a full, robust perspective on things from a variety of different places now in this day and age, because there's so much spin there. And if you're not afraid, you'll go through and walk through these things and come to a rational conclusion based on pulling all the different resources. As I say, the proof is in the pudding. It's not necessarily in the individual accounts per se. And I'm talking about things like this. So when it comes to the film industry, and I hope I'm not being too obtuse here, we see this again and again and again, okay? The Academy Awards were announced this week. That's why I'm bringing it up, okay? The Academy Awards were announced. Nominations were announced this week. And I'm going to just go through the list and give my thoughts on some of the nominees per se. And again, this is subjectivity on my part, but I want individuals who are listening to understand that sometimes certain films or certain projects are promoted or celebrated or elevated as far as their recognition is concerned, not because of the quality of the project, but because of the desire to further a particular agenda or to promote a certain leaning or understanding. And sometimes it's there just because people want to feel like they are the champions of good and, you know, versus being the purveyors or the shepherds of evil. I'll just put it that way, okay? So you look at the Academy Awards. I'll go through the list here. And I'll start at the top, and I think it kind of gives you a sense of, and it's interesting, I'm just looking at an article here on awardsdaily.com from curator of that site, Sasha Stone. She said, when making history is manufactured, not earned, it's kind of tied to this as well. So I'll go through the list. You've got Amelia Perez, The Brutalist, Anora, Conclave, A Complete Unknown, Wicked, Dune Part 2, The Substance, Nickel Boys, and I'm Still Here. Okay. So I would hazard a guess that, first of all, most people have not seen the majority of films listed here. Okay. Obviously, the exceptions being Wicked, which is actually Wicked Part 1, and Dune Part 2. Okay. The other films may or may not have been seen. But I'll start with this list as a whole. I mean, The Substance, again, it's an eclectic mix, I'll put it that way. And I think one of the things that this year's nominees, what the list of this year's nominees reveals is that there was really, it's not been a strong year for film in general. And a lot of it had to do with the writer's strike, if you're talking about films produced in North America, the actor's strike. All of this led to a stoppage of production. And so, you know, for smaller films or films that may not have had the chance to shine, they now have the chance to be recognized in these spaces, okay? But that doesn't necessarily mean that any of these films would be, you know, films that you would compare to, say, you know, The Lord of the Rings or Return of the King, for example, okay? Or The Godfather, okay? Or, you know, some of the other films that are really the films that stand the test of time, okay? Whether they win or not win. I could even go through the list and mention The Shawshank Redemption, which did not win Best Picture that year, but nonetheless is leagues more embraced, loved, recognized, and even from a, again, subjective technical perspective, vastly superior to any film on this list almost. Maybe from a technical perspective, you could argue Dune Part 2, cinematography-wise and what have you, it could be up there. But the film that really sticks, there are a couple films that stick out. I've already spoken about Anora in the past. And again, that's a primary example of Hollywood trying to have their cake and eat it too. Okay, they want to celebrate stories about underdogs, about people who are suffering, but they package it in decadence and in the complete unnecessary showing of carnal pleasures, if you will, on the screen. Okay, there's no reason to show a lot of things that we see in these films because, yes, these things are part of human life, but I've said this a million times, we don't necessarily need to see it, and we probably should not see it. Actually, not probably, should not see it. I will say that for a lot of different reasons. But the reason that there's this burning desire to have this on the silver screen is because that type of content is front and center of what people want to see. So again, we'll get into this discussion maybe down the road about what should be seen versus what people want to see and whether that what people want to see should be seen. But if you're trying to convince me that the reason that these scenes of carnal activity are in films like Anora and they're there because you have to see the dirty underbelly of things, I would say that you are being completely dishonest. You're either unaware that your argument has holes in it and doesn't make sense rationally, or number two, you're being completely dishonest and you're trying to sell me a bill of goods that really is not the reality of things, okay? Because I've said this before in the past, and I don't want to, you know, go on a rant again about Anora, but there are so many things in our lives that we experience on a daily basis. You know, I'll give you an example that I haven't given in the past. Let's say someone has a catheter, okay? Because they're unable to void, meaning they're not able to urinate without having a bag. You know, they urinate basically into a bag that's attached to their legs for a variety of different reasons. Maybe if they're men, their prostate is not functioning properly. Maybe they have MS, what have you, okay? Maybe they're elderly. Same with older men in their 80s and 90s who are maybe forced to wear, Depends, something like that. And yet, I don't recall ever seeing in a movie the nightmarish challenge of having to deal with that. You know, having to clean it, having to dispose of the urine after it's collected, having, you know, to deal with the embarrassment that's associated with that when you are forced to wear that and something happens. That is something that is a reality. And yet, we have not seen that. Now, you could argue, okay, there's never been a story about a character who's had to deal with that, but I would submit that there are many, 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 many more people in this world than we realize who are disabled, who have issues, who have to deal with that on a day-to-day basis. And if you showed that to people, it might elicit a level of empathy and sympathy in people's hearts that they would be more patient and more merciful to people who are disabled or people in general and recognize that they should be thankful for the blessings they have. But we don't see that, okay? We don't see people preparing meals step by step, even though that's part of the process of eating a nice meal. There's the preparation, there's the arrangement, the presentation, all of that comes into play. There might be a glimpse here and there once in a while, but even something that's not as unfortunate, that's something we don't see. But when it comes to the sexual or the sensual, there's this argument that they have to show it for you to understand it, or for you to appreciate it, or for you to feel it. And the reality of things is that when you show and reveal those kinds of, or you share those kinds of things, it removes the sanctity of the intimacy itself, because it's front and center. It's no longer something that's considered to be special or precious. And it does away with modesty. And say what you will about modesty, but societies, and there are many research studies that evidence this, there are definite correlations between modesty and clarity of thought and purpose of intent. Okay. Societies that dive into the purient, who dive into the carnal, for example, they tend to be societies that are either societies that we would not want to model, or they're societies on the decline. Okay. Because what happens is that when you make that front and center, and like I said, sensuality, sexuality is a part of the human dynamic. It's something that is very normal for people to desire. You keep putting that front and center. What happens is that people are so drawn to that that they ignore other things in their lives. It's not to say that we just can't control ourselves, but it's this constant proliferation of content that has this included in it that really leads to some there's a major impact, I'll just put it that, when it comes to how we perceive this, how we view it, the specialness of it, the privacy of it. And violence, it goes hand in hand with violence. We don't necessarily need to see extreme violence in films to understand that death is a horribly tragic, sad thing, and that human beings' lives are meant to be saved and preserved. But when you show violence again and again and again on the silver screen, people become numb to it. Okay? And that's the other thing tied with the carnal side of things as well. There's a numbing of people to those kinds of things, and they need other stimuli. So all of that being said, and we could have, you know, many, many experts come on here and talk about this better than I could. I'm just pushing back against the argument that we need to see it to understand it, because I do not believe that's the case. And I think oftentimes there's another reason behind this, or there's an ignorance of the impact of it. And because Hollywood wants to show or create this impression that they care about the poor, downtrodden people, so they have to show these kinds of things. And it's always the prostitutes or those people who are selling their bodies that seem to be front and center of what they need to show. They don't show as much, you know, people starving to death in developing nations, or they don't show people being blown to smithereens in other places. Okay, that they don't want to show, but they will show this because they want you to empathize with these people who are on the screen, and they feel like you have to show it. But if you're going to have a film like Oppenheimer, which I thought was a well-made film, but one of the criticisms about that film was that they didn't show the horrors of what happened to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They alluded to it. Oppenheimer dealt with the guilt in the film. But if you really want to get to the horrors that are associated with nuclear power, you have to show, if you go by this argument, the burning away of human flesh, the people suffering years and years and decades later after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, if you want to be authentic and true to this argument. So I don't buy it. But the film that really, you know, stands out in my mind is this film, Emilia Perez. Okay. Now, by most critics and fans and viewers' estimations, this film was mediocre at best. Okay, I'm just talking from a technical perspective. It was not a well-made film. It's a musical, and it wasn't a strong musical. It was a film about a gangster who goes through this process to try to actually, you know, again, I don't need to necessarily go through all the details, but it's a film directed by and he got nominated for an Oscar as well. I mean, an Oscar for Best Director as well. Jacques Audelard, a French director, but it's about Mexican culture, and it's been rejected by most people who are Mexican. Okay, so a film that was considered to not be technically strong, a film that does not seem to be accurate to Mexican culture, garners 13 Academy Award nominations, one of the highest totals in the history of film. Why? Why was that the case? And the main reason I submit that it was the case was because the lead character in Emilia Perez is someone who, and I'll just read the summary here so you can get a sense of what it is. A Mexican lawyer is offered an unusual job to help a notorious cartel boss retire and transition to living as a woman, fulfilling a long-held desire. Okay, that's the blur, okay? Now, I'm looking here on Google. It said 34% of the people like this movie. On Letterboxd, 2.4 out of 5, okay? Rotten Tomatoes, 75%. So it wasn't considered to be rotten, but it wasn't considered to be something that would be one of the top 10 films of the year. And then IMDb, it's a 6.2 out of 10. So why was this film given so many award nominations? And the only reason that I can think of is because the transgender movement is the movement that they wanted to recognize, that the Academy wanted to recognize. I won't get into the discussion about, you know, the social issues, the specifics of the social issues. I just want people to understand the motivations behind the Academy Awards. That when a film is or is not nominated, what's taken into consideration first and foremost with many projects is what this film is trying to promote, what it's trying to reject. And it's not really always front and center about how well the film is made or how the film is made. Because a film like this, okay, is clearly, and again, like I said, subjective, but we're looking at all these different metrics, a film that has not been considered to be one of the best films of the year. Not by the critics, not by the IMDb visitors, not by the people who visit Letterboxd, and not by the Google users, okay? That's a pretty scathing indictment against this film. All right? And now people are trying to figure out, why did this film get 13 Academy Award nominations? Why? And so I think we see again that there is a distrust, or mistrust, I should say, mistrust of the Hollywood scene, the film industry as a whole, because people feel like when it comes to questions of and about whatever topic, that there's an agenda behind it, and that is going to be the primary focus of what is at the forefront here. It's either one of two things, actually. One of the other things is basically almost like the organizations we see in different parts of the U.S., if not internationally, where, you know, they give people awards. It's like almost, you probably remember back in the day when you were in high school, it's like who's who in high school. They send you this, you know, back in the day it was mail, but you would get this letter saying, oh, congratulations, you're a member of who's who in this organization. And if you want to be included in this book, all you have to do is you know, send us X amount of dollars, you'll get a copy of this book, and you'll be listed in who's who and whatever. So basically, you're buying accolades, you're buying recognition. There are organizations that exist and where people, in which people get awards, and you're like, what is this organization and what is this award? I've never even heard of this award. It's because people want to get, you know, patted on the back. these circles of people. So this is also what Holly was about. It's about basically this ecosystem of people who want their ego stroked, okay? And so we didn't even get to go through the Oscars. So I guess we'll have to go through it next week as a whole, because I got off on these important tangents, I believe. But the reality of the situation is this, that a film like Emilia Perez, you have to ask yourself the question, why was this film recognized? And the best way to kind of address it or look at it is in the context of what's dominating conversation in popular culture, in politics, and see if there is a correlation there. Okay? I remember reading, last point before I go, about this actor in Turkey who was going to play a particular role in a third season of a very successful show, okay? And he and the studio were going back and forth because he had an option to do that. But what happened in the way Turkey works is that this show that was being produced, that he was filming for, was a show that was government-funded, okay? And the government in power won the election. And he, this actor, was not part of that political group that the leader who won was the head of. And so what he did was he basically said, I'm not going to come back for a third season. I've got other things I want to work on. I'm not happy with X, Y, and Z. He never complained about the show per se. He just, I had personal things. I want to be with my daughter, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality, because you look at his leaving in the context of what happened, his wife was very active in this other party that was against the leadership. He was a supporter of them as well. He was upset and wanted to send a message to the leadership that won that, look, I'm not going to be involved with anything that your government is involved with, a TV show or otherwise. So yes, the media sent out a statement, but the reality is that you have to look at everything in the proper context and see what happens when other dominoes fall. And that's what happened here. And I'm telling you, this is why this film is getting the recognition of this caliber. It's getting these awards, the number of these awards, because this topic is front and center. And the powers who run Hollywood, they want to push their perspective on this. That's the reality. Whatever side of the aisle you fall on, that's the reality. So it's not really in recognition of the quality, it's a recognition of something else. You're listening to Fictional Frontiers. We'll catch you up next week.